नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय उत्थापनाय उनायनैश शालनाय स्थापनाय अपि परस्परं जिगिषन्ता अपचक्रतुरात्मनः उत्थापनाय उनायनैश शालनाय स्थापनायरपि परस्परं चिकित्सन्ता अपचक्रतुरात्मना उत्थापनाय उनायनैश शालनाय स्थापनायरपि परस्परं जिगिषन्ता अपचक्रतुरात्मनः
Uthapanaya, with lifting up, unayanaya, caring, chalanai, pushing away, stapanai, holding stationary, api, also, parasparam, each other, jigisantau, wanting victory, apachakratuhu, they harmed atmana, even themselves, forcefully lifting and carrying each other, pushing each other away and holding each other down. The fighters hurt even their own bodies in their great eagerness for victory. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that although Krishna and Balaram did not, of course, harm themselves, it appeared that way to Chanura, Mustika, and others of mundane vision. In other words, the lords were fully absorbed in the pastime of being wrestlers. Om Agyan Timidandasya Jnananjana Tsalakaya Chakshuru Nididam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamayam Tatati Sva Padantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutha Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagra Jataham Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahakana Vadita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kansana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vamshad Palpatarubhyascha Kripasandubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadada Sri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 44, entitled The Killing of Kamsa, Text Number 5. Yesterday, we were discussing Krishna's entrance into Mathura. Especially how he showered his grace upon Trivakra or Kubja. A story that gives us great instruction and hope. Because like Kubja, we are all inherently perfect, being part of Krishna. Our glory is our connection to Krishna. Because Krishna is supremely perfect. Our perfection is not something that we should be proud that just see how perfect I am. Because in material existence, this conception of understanding one's own greatness either creates arrogance toward those who are not so great, or makes us depressed that someone may even be greater. But when we understand what true greatness is, Janmatya Sayataha, this is the first aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra, Srila Vyasadev, after writing compiling Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, expanding upon them through Upanishads, Agamas, Puranas, Mahabharata, he compiled the Vedanta Sutra in very short sutras, very, very concise verses. He explained the essence of all knowledge and begins with Janmatya Syayata, that everything emanates from the Absolute Truth. Nothing could be separate from the Absolute Truth. The only separation possible is our forgetfulness of the inherent connection we have with the Absolute Truth. That is Maya. Maya, Srila Prabhupada translates, is that which is not. Because no one can ever be separated from Krishna. But when we think we're separate, when we forget that relationship, it's just not appreciating the only reality. And that is the cause of all problems and suffering. So being part of Krishna, to the extent we understand Krishna, to that extent we understand our own value. Krishna is infinite, ever increasing in every aspect of his perfection. His beauty is the source of all beauty. It's the fullness, the accumulation of all beauty. And at the same time, it's beyond. It's ever increasing. As is his character, his love, his happiness. And because every living being is a part of Krishna, the more we understand Krishna, the more we understand our love for Krishna. And how could there be arrogance? Because we see that every living being is also an equal part of the perfection of Krishna. So in bhakti, in spiritual realization, the greater we understand we are being part of Krishna, also the greater we can appreciate everyone as being part of Krishna. But somehow or other, due to the selfish egoism, it makes us the weight, just like Kubja was a hunchback. And the weight of her back made her whole body crooked. So from an analogy perspective, the weight of our ahankar, our ego, tends to make us very crooked. Crooked means we want to exploit others. We want to claim the property of God to be our own. We want to be the enjoyer. We want to be the proprietor. We want to be the lord of all we survey. Greed, envy, anger, selfish passion, illusion. This makes us crooked. And because of the weight of our previous conditionings, living such a crooked life, the weight of our samskaras and our karmas and our attachments and our illusions are so heavy. Only by Krishna's grace can we become straight, whole, and again in our natural, beautiful spiritual condition. Krishna tells in Gita, this grace is only attainable through bhakti, through devotional service. Kubja rendered service. She was attracted by Krishna, and she was willing to even risk her life to please Krishna. Kamsa represents that envy and that materialistic arrogance and greed. And it was by the influence of Kamsa that she was thinking that whatever she had was for his satisfaction. In a similar way, we are all serving this Kamsa energy that is within and without. This selfishness, this arrogance. But with the same thing she was all about to offer to Kamsa, she decided, I want to give this to Krishna. Similarly, with the same bodies, with the same minds, with the same facilities, if we just offer them with devotional service for the pleasure of Krishna, then we attract Krishna. So Kubja just offered some service. She performed bhakti. And the result is she attained Krishna's grace. Krishna lifted her up, made her straight, made her in her natural condition, and in that natural condition, her love for Krishna awakened forever. She realized her constitutional position. And within, by the inconceivable grace of the Lord, from just being kind of a rejected person, she developed a mood very much like the gopis. She became Krishna's lover, and Krishna became her lover. So as the story goes on, in today's verse, Chanura and Mustika, these two powerful wrestlers, have challenged Krishna. This was Kamsa's arrangement. Kamsa considered Krishna a competitor, a threat. Because on the day of Vasudeva and Devaki's marriage, Kamsa, who was so affectionate to his sister Devaki, decided, I will personally come off my throne and drive you on your chariot to your new home. Then a celestial voice resounded in the sky. warning comes that the eighth son of Devaki will be the cause of his death. He became so much afraid. He was considered so fearless, but he was so afraid. He had so many powers, supernatural powers. He could conquer practically anyone in the universe. Each of his hands and arms had far more strength than 10,000 gigantic elephants. Can you imagine? And they kind of just looked like regular arms. It's not that his arms were like, looked like 10,000 elephants. But that was the power within them. And he actually subjugated all of the different asuras and all different planets. But no material acquisition of wealth, strength, fame, beauty, nothing in this world can free us from fear. And you can't really be happy when you're in fear. Fear that something that is undesirable is imminent in our life. Abrama bhuvanar loka punar avatunojana. Krishna tells that from the highest planet in this material world down to the lowest, all are places where everyone has to suffer. Because death is for sure. Death is absolutely certain for the physical body. The only thing that's somewhat uncertain is when exactly it's going to happen. And this when is a very disturbing conception, because it could actually jump padam padam yad vipadam natesha. It could actually happen to anyone at any moment, whoever we are. So this is a fearful situation. And Kamsa was given a nice warning. Now, Shukadeva Goswami is describing this story to Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj was given the warning that he was going to die in 7 days. But he had no fear at all. In fact, he was happy. He took this as a wonderful blessing, an opportunity. But just see, he's a king. Kamsa wasn't even yet the king. He usurped the kingdom afterward. He was a crown prince. Parikshit Maharaj was the king. And when he was told he was going to die in 7 days, he accepted, this is Krishna's grace. My soul's eternal. But whatever little time we have in this human life, we can utilize to realize the eternal blissful nature of the soul in our relationship with Krishna, with God. Maharaj Katvanga, one of the great historical personalities, Parikshit Maharaj, referred to Mahajano Yena Gatasa Panta. We refer to the great souls of the history. Maharaj Katvanga was told, after he did so much service for the demigods, he literally gave up sleeping for years to fight on their behalf. And he did so well. He actually protected the devatas. And after all that, it's hard work. Usually if you really work hard like that, you're expecting some happiness in return, some blessing. So the devas said, well, what blessing would you like? We could give you anything.
He said, I just want to know when I'm going to die. They checked the records, the karmic celestial records. They said, you are going to die in one moment. Now, Maharaj Kutvanga could have said, you know, I could have spent those years enjoying the last year. I spent all those years in so much pressure and stress fighting for you. And what am I going to get for it? I'm going to die now before I can even enjoy the fruits of it. But he didn't think like that. Because he was raised to understand the true value of life. So he took it as a blessing. So nice, I know when I'm going to die. Antakale chamameva smaran bhaktva kalevaram. Krishna tells, if you just remember me at the time of death, you come to me. So he remembered Krishna. And in a moment he went back home, back to God. He was happy. So Pariksha Maharaj had 7 days. Let me go to the bank of the Ganga, the Ganges, to be among the great saints of the world, Vyasadeva, Narada, Parasara, Bhadraj Muni, all of these great saints, Vishwamitra, Vashishta, they all came to be with the king. What a wonderful thing. 7 days and their association is worth millions of lifetimes just trying to make ends meet in this world. And he only prayed for one benediction from all of them. Just let me be absorbed in hearing and chanting the glories of my Lord. So that's Parikshit. He had no fear because he understood the purpose of life. And here's Kamsa. Eighth son, that means he had minimum 8 years to live. Because, yeah? You know, you can't, you know, it may be 9 months of pregnancy and all that, and then a baby's born, and it's not that the next day you have another baby. So minimum he had 8 years. Yes? But he was so afraid. Pariksit had 7 days, no fear. Kamsa, immediately he put his sister and his brother-in-law in prison and shackled them and started. He was afraid that any one of their children may be this eighth child, even though it's supposed to be the eighth child, and he was killing every one of them upon birth. And then when the eighth child was born, you know, he thought it was this little girl, and he was about to kill her, and the little girl went in the sky and said, oh, Kamsa, you are so foolish. Krishna knows how to really straighten you out. The thing is, when Krishna went to straighten out Kubja, she just surrendered. Whatever you want, Krishna. So when he just put his feet on her feet and with his two little fingers, he pulled her up by the chin, she was just like surrendered. She went up. She wasn't trying to hold on to the position she was in. She, Sharanagati, she took shelter. She gave herself. Krishna, whatever you like, I am yours. But Kamsa was all fearful. Even though he stole the kingdom away from his own father and put his father in prison, put his sister and brother in prison, anyone who wasn't totally surrendered to anything he said, he either killed them or drove them out. And most of the Yadu dynasty, Andaka dynasty, Bhoja dynasty, most of them just fled to secret places and hid because they didn't want to be under the dictatorship of Kamsa. But Kamsa was afraid. Real strength is to rise above this fear. And we can only rise above the fear in a real way when we totally humble ourselves before God, before Krishna. You can't be arrogant and fearless. Because arrogance means you're holding on to your own separate egoistic identity. And before people in this world who we may be able to conquer to some extent, Kamsa had no opponent. He had no competitor in this world. The demigods, they had to approach Vishnu and say, please help us with this Kamsa, we can't do it. So powerful. But yet, when a warning came, he lived in such fear. Because death is inevitable for everyone. Unless we identify with our eternal soul, then we become transcendental. Kamsa sent so many asuras, demons, to Vrindavan, and Krishna delivered every one of them. Then he invited Krishna to come to Mathura, where he was going to see him for the first time, face to face. And he had all these arrangements. He had his entire military ready to fight Krishna. He had Kuvalaya Pida, this massive elephant that was stronger than thousands of elephants. And then ultimately he had Chanura and Mushtika, the two wrestlers. And he was sitting on his throne, not only with his armies, but with his own mighty arms and his sword and all of his weapons, ready to kill Krishna if nothing else worked. He really planned everything very strategically. He was an incredible manager, incredible organizer. But it was all for the wrong reasons. And Krishna sees our purpose. He just doesn't see how good we are at something. He sees the purpose in which we're doing it. So Chanura and Mustika saw little Krishna and Balaram. Everyone was seeing them in different ways, according to their nature. And Chanura and Mustika, even though Krishna, the ladies of Mathura were seeing his limbs as being so beautiful and so tender, they were actually seeing them as very, very powerful adversaries. And challenged them to fight for the pleasure of Kamsa. And in today's verse, they're in the middle of the fight. And Krishna and Balaram are making things so exciting. Just to draw the ecstasies of love from the hearts of different people. And to draw whatever responses according to a person's particular state of consciousness for all time to come. When we become absorbed in hearing Shravanam, we can actually experience exactly the same emotions and the same reciprocation with Krishna as the people of Mathura when they were watching the fight. In the coming verses, the ladies of Mathura, when they were seeing this, they were in so much distress. Because Krishna's charm, his smiles, his beauty, his lovingness really enchanted their hearts. They fell in love with Krishna just by seeing him. And the nature of their love was they were severely worried about Krishna and they began to speak among themselves with quite loud voices. They were exclaiming, "Alas, what a greatly irreligious act the members of this royal assembly are committing. As the king watches this fight between the strong and the weak, they also want to see it." You see, these women, they consider the match totally unfair. Chanura and Mustika, their limbs were like lightning bolts, and their bodies were like gigantic mountains. They were so fast, and they were trained with such strength to kill, to destroy, to crush human bodies or anything else that came before them. And they're seeing Chanura Mushtika, and then they're looking at little Krishna and Balaram. They were a fraction of their size. Krishna and Balaram appeared in their Kishore Lila. When they came to Mathura, they were both 11 years old. To be specific, they were 10 years and 7 months old when they came. And Chanura Mushtika were at the prime of their adulthood. They were grown. Krishna's, Balaram's limbs looked so soft. They didn't have big muscles or anything like that. Their limbs were like lotus petals. How unfair this is. And then they're fighting with each other. And as they're fighting, they're seeing that Krishna and Balaram, they have perspiration on their faces. They compare their perspiration to the dew on a lotus flower. Now Krishna's perspiring, and that perspiration is invoking so much anxiety in the women. Because they're interpreting the perspiration is how much Krishna and Balaram are struggling and straining against these giant wrestlers. It's unfair. It's irreligious. We shouldn't even be here. According to the laws of the scriptures, according to the teachings of the saints, if one enters into an assembly where irreligious activities are being performed, one should either not go in, or one should immediately leave, or one should speak up to protest. But if one just sits silently out of fear and allows all these irreligious things to go on, then one becomes implicated in the sinful reactions. So what are we doing here? How could we tolerate this? Kamsa, our king, he is so sinful. He's inviting this. He's organizing this and he's watching this. But what about all the rest of the innocent citizens? They're watching just like their king. Krishna tells in Gita that what great people do, what leaders do, the common people follow. And they're saying, we're all doing what Kamsa's doing. This is sinful. This is terrible. It's not fair. These beautiful, young, tender boys being put in a match with these killers. And then the ladies naturally we're thinking of Vrindavan. How fortunate are the people of Vrindavan. Because there, all the Brijbasis, they don't come to see Krishna in this situation. They spent their lives seeing Krishna playing his flute, dancing with his devotees, giving pleasure to his cows. What a wonderful place Vrindavan is, where everyone was taking pleasure seeing Krishna enjoying with Balaram, with his devotees. But what a wretched place, what a condemned place Mathura is, where everyone's assembled to see Krishna fighting against these monsters. And the ladies began to meditate and talk among themselves about the supreme good fortune of the gopis of Vrindavan. What type of austerities the gopis must have performed, where they were seeing Krishna in such a loving mood of happiness in the forest, garlanded with beautiful flowers. And gopis, remembering these loving pastimes of Krishna, whether they were milking cows, or whether they were churning butter, or whether they were making cow dung patties, or whether they were harvesting wheat or grinding grains, or whether they were just cleaning their homes. Whatever they did, the gopis were constantly meditating on the beautiful, loving pastimes of Krishna. Always singing about Krishna. Always talking about Krishna. And this is what we have to see. Our first vision of Krishna is in this condition. They were asking, what type of austerities did the gopis do? Because they also wanted to have the love of the gopis and the opportunity of the gopis. But it's not by austerities. They were remembering even Goddess Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. In Balvan or Srivan, she performed long years of tapasya, austerities, in order to enter into the loving pastimes of the gopis with Krishna. But even such an exalted personality could not enter unless one follows in the footsteps of the gopis with all humility. Unless one gets the grace of Sri Radha and the gopis, there's no other way. And this is bhakti. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give what even Lakshmi was longing for to everyone and anyone who just accepts it in this age of Kali. This is a very, very special blessing that through Srila Prabhupada and our Guru Parampara, we've all been given. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells us, Savai pungsang puro dharmo yato bhaktir hoksha jaya hoitiki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. That the supreme perfection of all dharma is the awakening of pure love of God from the heart. Unmotivated, uninterrupted, loving service to the Supreme Lord. This is the goal, the essence of every religion. And it is recognized and adored wherever we may see it. But at the same time, the nature of the gopis' love is so inclusive, so intimate, so profound. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has come to give us entrance into this love. Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prempadayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gauravesheinam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so magnanimous. Even more magnanimous than Krishna himself. Even though he is Krishna himself. How can Krishna be more magnanimous than Krishna? Krishna is Swarat. He's independent. He can do anything he likes. He can be more magnanimous than himself, and he cannot be more magnanimous than himself. He can be less magnanimous than himself. Krishna can do anything. That's Krishna. Yes? In his various avatars, he comes as Ram, he comes as Narasimha, and basically manifests this. The same opulences as Krishna are in Narasimha and Ram, according to Rupa Goswami. It's just that they don't display them. Krishna just displays his complete intimate opulences. Narayan, Vishnu, Varaha, Kurma, so many avatars. Bhagavatam says just like there are waves in the ocean, Krishna manifests so many avatars throughout history. And they are all non-different than him. So someone may ask, how is it that one avatar is displaying a higher degree of love and intimacy than another, if it's the same person? Because the Lord's independent. He could reveal himself less magnanimous, as magnanimous, more magnanimous. That's Krishna. But he's supremely magnanimous in all of them. So if there's supreme, completely full, unlimited mercy, then how could there be this more or less? If something is unlimited, how could something be more than unlimited? For those of you who are logical mathematicians, really, try to explain that. How can something be greater than unlimited? Unlimited means no end. For something to be greater than something means it has to, the other thing has to have an end. Krishna's unlimited in all of his forms, in all of his incarnations, and in how he manifests in all of the great religions of the world. How could something be more? Achintya. In other words, it's beyond us to understand. But Krishna's so achintya. It's totally beyond our understanding. But yet, we can understand. Do you understand? You can't understand. But at the same time, you can understand. That is Krishna's lila. And Krishna explains he's the supreme source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani chajana. Krishna says, I know everything. I know everything in the past, all that's happening now, all things in the future. I know every living being. He's the sarveshwareshwara. He's the controller of all controllers. But yet, he forgets. Sometimes he forgets. This is wonderful. How could the person who knows everything, who's beyond forgetfulness, forget? Now for somebody think if this is either something crazy or it's an imperfection. How can the Lord who knows everything forget? We forget because of ignorance. But Krishna, this is part of his completeness. in order to reciprocate and not only reciprocate, but actually enter into deep loving relationships with his devotees, Krishna, by his own will, can forget. Queen Kunti was expressing in her glorification of Krishna. Krishna's feared by fear personified. And yet when Mother Yashoda held up a little stick, it was just a twig. And she had absolutely no intention even touching Krishna with that twig. And Krishna knows everyone's intentions. He's the Paramatma in Yashoda Mai's heart. He knows what she's thinking. And she picks it up and she says, Krishna, you are so naughty. And Krishna runs away. And not only is he running away, but as he's running, he's crying. And then she catches him. And she said, Krishna, why are you doing this? So you're playing with monkeys and you're and you're breaking butter pots and you're making a mess of your own house. Why are you doing? And Krishna's pleading with her, crying, please don't be mad at, don't be angry with me. I'm sorry, I won't do it again. And our acharyas explain, he's not faking it, as we may say. He's actually thinking. He's so much under the beautiful experience of Yashoda's love that he's actually afraid of her. But it's not like our fear. His fear is he's just totally captured by her love. And Kunti is thinking, he's afraid of Yashoda. And this is incredible. Because here, Krishna has no fear of Chanara and Mushtika. But he's afraid of Yashoda. Yashoda Mai didn't have any thunderbolt limbs or mountainous arms. She was just a very delicate, motherly gopi, a lady. And here are these, the champion wrestlers under Kamsa. Krishna has no fear. He's laughing at Chanara and Mushtika. And he's crying and trembling and his lips are quivering in the presence of Yashoda Mai. This is rasa. This is the sweetness of loving exchange. And the ladies of Mathura are remembering these beautiful pastimes of Vrindavan. What a wonderful place Vrindavan is. Yes, Kamsa sent asuras there. But the Vrijabasis, they hardly even saw those things. The gopis rarely saw Krishna with demons. They would just hear the stories from the gopas when they would come back from the pastures. They would meet Krishna at night and dance with him and sing with him and play with him. Yashoda Mai and Nanda Maharaj, they were feeding him and massaging him and dressing him. How beautiful. The Vrijabasis are simply playing with Krishna and enjoying with Krishna. What a beautiful place that is. And here, this is what Mathura is. We have to see him fighting with wrestlers. They were so much in anguish. And as they were talking among themselves, when Krishna and Balaram would leave in the morning with their cows, they'd play their flutes. And gopis would all come running out of their houses and just watch Krishna and Balaram leaving for the pastures. And how beautiful that was. was Krishna and Balaram, and the gopas were so happy, so playful. They would be playing their flutes, and their friends would be blowing on horns, and they would be joking and laughing and decorating themselves, and all the cows would be smiling and dancing with Krishna, and this is how they began their day every day. And then throughout the whole day, they're just immersed in meditating on the happiness of Krishna. And then in the evening, as they were coming back from the pastures, Krishna Balaram would play their flutes again, and all the gopis would come out again and see Krishna returning. How beautiful. After playing all day and taking care of his loving cows, and they were so much missing Krishna in separation. That separation immersed their consciousness in remembering his beauty, his smile, his leelas, his love. And Krishna knew that. And as he'd play the flute and come back, their eyes like the chakora bird looking at the full moon. Or like the chatak bird, waiting for the rains to come. With such unblinking glances, they would be looking upon Krishna. And Krishna would be smiling. And he'd be playing the flutes just for them. This is Krishna. Rasa Bihari. The connoisseur of perfect love. Every cow, every calf, every bull, every peacock, every parrot, every gopa, every gopi, everyone, every tree, every flower. When Krishna plays the flute, everyone thinks he's playing for me. And it's not that they're just thinking this. He actually is. He is playing only for you. Now, if everyone comes together later on and says, he was playing only for me. Somebody says, no, he was playing only for me. Somebody else is saying, no, he's playing only for me. Because only means no one else. Yes? It's a really nice word, only. But Krishna could play only for everybody. Individually, personally. He's the source of all love, Prem. You see, the word love has a certain understanding in our minds according to our experiences in our life and according to how we philosophically study these things. But the word Prem cannot really be translated with the word love, although it can be. Because there's no real description of prem in material language. Prem is the perfect ecstasy of the sweetness of Krishna's love for us and how we respond by loving Krishna. It's inconceivable. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, prema pumartha mahan, that the highest goal is prem, this ecstatic love. You can only understand prem when you have prem. And you can never have prem unless by Sri Radha's grace it's given to us. And how could something be given to us when it's inherently within us? Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sacha Kabunoi Sravanadi Sudhichiti Kodiya Yudhoi. This prema is our nature eternally. We've never been without it. It can never be taken away from us. It's just that we forget it because we're so distracted due to the cloud of illusion, birth after birth. So if something is eternally ours, how can it be given to us? This bhakti lata bija, The seed of love is within us. So how is it given by the Guru? Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. But at the same time, it makes sense. And at the same time, it really doesn't make sense. But that's Krishna. Because without grace, without Krishna's grace, it cannot be awakened. Even though we have it, we have no access to it. Unless Krishna, Sri Radha, with the key of their grace, opens the treasure chest of our hearts to reveal it to us. No matter how much charity we give, no matter how many austerities we perform, no matter how punctual we are for every temple program, and no matter how diligent and concentrated we are in our japa and our kirtan and our meditation and everything else we do, that's not enough. All of our devotional practices, like Kupja, she made her devotional offering, but ultimately, it wasn't her offering that made her straight and awakened her love. It was Krishna's grace. But it's by our japa, by our kirtan, by our punctuality, by all of our activities, our charity, whatever, if it pleases Krishna, then by Sri Radha's grace, we become straight, we become whole, and our love awakens. So when Krishna is glancing, every gopi is thinking he's glancing upon me. And what is Krishna's glance? All of the philosophy of the Upanishads, all of the philosophies of every philosopher that ever lived in this world cannot fathom what that momentary glance is like. Because when Krishna casts his glance, even if it's for a moment, according to the Vedic calculation, a moment means 1/12th of a second. Now, you know, as you're sitting there, how many 12ths of seconds are going by? And can you even grasp onto? Can you consciously grasp onto it? As soon as you try to, it's gone. It's the way time is. Okay, I'm going to really be here now. I'm going to be in the present moment. I'm going to be in this 1/12th of a second. But as soon as you try to... As soon as you just fix your mind on that 12th of a second, about 100 of them have already passed. And the one you're trying to fix, that is already long gone. That's how the world works. But when Krishna, because this is Nitya Leela, when Krishna glances, even for a 12th of a second, his love, his appreciation for who we are, who we've always been, his recognition of all the pains that we may be going through to serve him, to love him, everything is completely communicated. With that 12th of a second, Krishna can fully express his appreciation and love for us and everything about us. And his infinite love for us. That's Krishna's glance. And he does it in such a childlike, spontaneous, natural way. It's not like, you know, he's looking at everybody like, bzz, bzz, bzz. He's just playing with his friends and laughing with his friends, and it might just be, You know, he's not even really looking at you in the sense that he's like, you know, going to everybody. It's while he's doing everything else, playing his flute and joking and dancing, he's just, in such a natural way, his glance connects with everyone. And in that moment, completely fulfills the soul, the heart of the soul. This is Vrindavan. Then here in Mathura, instead of seeing Krishna coming from with pastures, dancing, playing, music, all of his friends, we see him, he's locked up with Chanura. And their knees are against each other and their fists are against each other. And Chanura is picking up Krishna and throwing him on the ground. And Krishna's throwing Chanura to the ground and they're looking at each other and their eyes are all red with anger. And they're so big and they're so hard and Krishna's so little and soft. And how is he going to survive? They're in so much anguish. Devaki and Vasudev, they're sitting and they're hearing the ladies of Mathura what they're saying. And they enter into such a distressed condition. Because as devotees talk about their love for Krishna, it affects our hearts. Devaki and Vasudev, they became so afraid and so ashamed. They were thinking that what a mistake we made. We should have not allowed Akrura to go to Vrindavan. Kamsa sent Akrura to Vrindavan. But we should have somehow or other done anything, even if it meant our lives, we should have stopped them from coming. How could we have permitted being part of this most sinful experience of seeing Krishna wrestling against these monsters, these demons? And when Krishna, even though he was right in the middle of this wrestling match, he could hear all the words of the ladies of Mathura. And he could feel the thoughts of Vasudeva and Devaki. And he decided, he was perspiring. And his perspiration was his reciprocation of love. On one level, his perspiration was making Chanura and Mustika more exciting, thinking, just see how we're causing them so much distress. But it was also awakening this vatsalya, this motherly love among all the ladies. This vatsalya bhav, or this worrying about Krishna, is actually intimately interwoven in the various relationships with Krishna. Even the cowherd boyfriends, they're purely sakya ras, but when they see Krishna in a difficult situation, they fear for him in their friendly way. Just like in a prana pratishtha, or the installation of deities. I know in my own life, when the priests pick up Srimati Radharani, or pick up Krishna, to carry them to the bathing place, or then to pick them up and carry them from the bathing place to the altar. Because they're coming in these beautiful forms which seem materially so vulnerable, yes? We look at their beautiful limbs and we know if any of the pujaris slip, then Krishna's limbs will be broken. Yes? And the pujaris are just kind of people like us. they sometimes slip. Especially when there's all kinds of ghee and honey and milk all over the place. Lifting deities. And then they bring them on the altar and they have to put them in little holes and everything. And it's happened. So I remember it at Govardhan Eco Village when they lifted Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Bihari, even though they weren't named at the time. They were lifting them to bring them to their beds. And it's so beautiful, but so much anxiety. Because they're carrying them. And there's so many of them. Like four people carrying each deity. And if any one of those four slip or move in a wrong way, everybody else. And Krishna is so vulnerable. We're praying so intensely. Please, Krishna, just get him to that bed. So painful to see them being carried because they could break. Just get them to the bed. Get them to the bed. And then when they're laying in the bed, oh, so nice, so beautiful. But then anxiety that tomorrow they have to lift them from the bed and they have to bring them to the bathing. And then all these people are going to be bathing. And what if somebody drops the conch? You know, all these different people. What if somebody drops the conch shell on their heads? And really, and too much anxiety. But at the same time, it's so blissful. We're seeing Krishna enjoying, and at the same time, we're worrying. And then after that, they lift them to bring them to the altar. And I just praying, Sri Radharani, just please protect Krishna as he's being brought. And Krishna, please protect Radharani. But Krishna's indestructible. Janura and Mushtika could not harm a single limb of Krishna. Yes? But yet, Pujari slips and it can harm his limbs. This is Krishna's inconceivable nature. But it's all for the purpose of attracting our love. Vasudeva and Devaki are so worried. And Krishna understood their worry. And he heard the ladies talking. They were worrying so much. So Krishna decided, enough with these wrestlers. I can't put my devotees in so much distress, even though I purposely put them in distress. I put them in distress to increase their love, but I have to also relieve their distress because of their love. So then Krishna effortlessly, he grabbed Chanura by his arms and whirled him around in the air. Just and then threw him in the ground. And Chanura was liberated. The word liberated is a very deep, profound, philosophical way of saying he was dead. Because when Krishna does that, he gives you eternal life. Yes? and then Balaram is with Mushtika, and Balaram has his eyes are already red, and Mushtika's eyes are already red, and they're looking at each other, and they're just crushing their limbs against each other, and they're squeezing each other, and then Balaram just takes his open hand. Didn't even make a fist. Just took his open hand and gave Mushtika one slap. Mushtika was liberated. And liberation means what? No, he gained eternal life. But the doorway to enter that eternal life was that he was dead. Toshala and Sala and all these other big wrestlers, they couldn't tolerate what happened. This was an insult to their whole prestige as wrestlers. So they attacked Krishna and Balaram, and Balaram just gave them all liberation. And when all these most powerful wrestlers were laying on the wrestling mats, liberated, Kamsa completely lost all control. Now, he was sitting on the throne watching, in the cricket game, some world championship, the prime minister has a special seat and the president of the nation has his special seat. So Kamsa was in the imperial throne on a high level with the very, very special guards all around him. And when he saw all the wrestlers dead, Kuvalayapita dead, the guards, his bow broken, he just totally lost control of his mind and stood up and started screaming. And when Kamsa screams, it's really like the roaring of lions, many lions, with such anger, with such cruelty and evil intent, he screamed out that, "Drive these foolish boys out of this city." And Vasudeva and Devaki, kill them. And my father Ugrasena, kill him. He ordered this immediately. And when Krishna saw how Vakamsa was about to kill Vasudeva and Devaki, kill Ugrasena, and he was insulting them, he was calling everybody fools, he was screaming out that Krishna Balaram, he said, "These foolish, evil boys, drive them out of our city." He was calling them evil. See, the world is a reflection of our own mind. It's like a mirror. He wasn't just saying it. He really felt that they were evil, because he was so egoistically focused on the universe being centered around him. Anything that was against him was evil. He was so evil. But he didn't see himself as evil. He saw nice people as evil. Because for him, evil meant they're not satisfying my desires. So as he was giving orders, and all of Krishna's devotees were about to be killed, Krishna reciprocated with them. Like a flash, Krishna, who was down in the wrestling mat, he jumped to where Kamsa was sitting. High platform. And the people of Mathura couldn't even see Krishna jumping up, because it just happened so fast. Jumped up, but Kamsa saw him. And when Kamsa saw Krishna jumping toward him, Kamsa stood up, drew his sword, had his shield, and was ready to fight. He was totally prepared for this momentous occasion where he was face to face, ready to do battle with Krishna personally. He had already sent so many of associates. Now it was one-on-one. It's you and me. And he had total conviction that with his sword he was going to destroy Krishna. And Krishna effortlessly, Krishna is so wonderful. Kamsa standing with his sword and his shield like a giant mountain ready to fight. And Krishna knocks Kamsa's crown off. His king crown. Just knocked it off and then pulled his hair. That's the way the coward boys fight. They pull each other's hair. He pulled Kamsa's hair and then picked up Kamsa and threw him all the way down from his high imperial seat down to the wrestling mat. And Kamsa just hit the ground. Now Kamsa was so powerful, how could that affect him? He was a mystic yogi. You can throw him from another planet, it's not going to hurt him. But Krishna threw him down, and he was finished. He was liberated. Then Krishna jumped down really fast. He jumped down from the imperial box throne platform where Kamsa had his throne. And Krishna understood that everybody was watching, and all the ladies and Vasudeva and Devaki and Nanda Maharaj was there with the cowherd boys. Oh, I'm going to tell you one other thing. I'm going to rewind for a moment. Now that you have computers, you don't have rewinding anymore. It used to be. But I'm going to go back. Krishna really knows how to get emotions out of people. After Krishna and Balaram liberated Chandra, Mushtaka, and all the other wrestlers, Krishna called the cowherd boys down from their special booth to come down in the wrestling mat arena with him. And all the Brijabasi cowherd boys came down, and Krishna and the cowherd boys started dancing and singing and laughing to celebrate Krishna's winning the match. That's what really got Kamsa upset. Because you see, Kamsa had the best musicians in his whole kingdom who were playing music. And the whole purpose of that music was to celebrate Krishna and Balaram being killed. And here, that music was playing, and Krishna Balaram and all these little cowherd boys are just dancing as if they were in the pastures of Vrindavan, dancing and playing and singing and jumping on each other and embracing each other and just dancing and celebrating. And the inhabitants of Mathura are watching this. And Kamsa was outraged. Krishna pulled him by the hair, threw him down, and then just so that nobody would have any more anxieties about Krishna, when Krishna jumped down from that high platform, he landed right on the body of Kamsa, so no one would think he hurt himself. And then, according to Krishna book, he straddled on Kamsa's body, and with his beautiful little hand, he started hitting Kamsa like thunderbolts. And Kamsa was liberated. But Kamsa caused so much harm, so much fear, so much death to so many people that Krishna could read people's hearts. They knew how infallible Kamsa appeared. So Krishna, just to assure everyone that you are all now free from Kamsa, he effortlessly started pulling Kamsa around on the ground, just dragging him here and here and there like a piece of rag. He was just dragging him here and there and here and there and then threw him. And everybody celebrated. Everybody. Except Kamsa's wives. And the wrestlers' wives. But they became self-realized souls. First they cried, oh, we have lost our lives, we have lost our husbands. But then they were saying that Krishna and Balaram are the supreme personality of Godhead. They're, and why our husbands were such fools. Of course, if you're against God, you're going to be defeated. So they understood. And while everybody in Mathura practically was celebrating, they're finally freed from the tyranny of Kamsa. And they're all seeing the beauty and the grace and feeling the love and the mercy of Krishna. Vasudeva and Devaki. They stood with their hands folded. Because after... Please enter into this mood of Vasudeva and Devaki. They were terrorized by Kamsa for years and years. They were shackled, imprisoned. Their children were killed. They were constantly being harassed. They knew the powers of Kamsa. And here, Krishna and Balaram, their little boys, had just killed them. So they understood that Krishna and Balaram is Lord Narayan. It's the Supreme Absolute Truth, is God. So they weren't thinking themselves as his mother and father anymore. They were afraid to approach him like that. They were just worshiping him and honoring him and standing like statues in such awe of Krishna and Balaram. When Krishna and Balaram saw them like that, they didn't like it. Because although they were in ecstasy, they wanted to give them a deeper, more intimate ecstasy of loving them as children. Krishna covered them with the Yogamaya potency. And then Krishna and Balaram came right up to Vasudeva and Devaki and bowed their heads. They bowed down and touched the feet of their mother and father and put it on their heads. Now, that's not what God does to people. But when God takes the role of such an intimate child, this is how he reciprocates. Vasudeva and Devaki became so overwhelmed with this Vatsalya Bhav, this parental affection, they sat down and lifted up Krishna and Balaram and put them on their laps and embraced them again and again and again. Krishna and Balaram were begging forgiveness from Vasudeva and Devaki. You had to endure so much difficulty because of us. And we left you from our earliest childhood to live somewhere else, and we were enjoying our life in so many ways in Vrindavan, but meanwhile, you were in prison, suffering. They asked forgiveness, but now we're here for you, and we will do anything to pacify you. After all, a parent, this is what Krishna Balaram were saying, a parent gives us birth. A parent sustains us and keeps us alive and gives us pleasure when we're in the most helpless times of our life. If we don't appreciate that, if we don't reciprocate with that, then we have lost all sense of Dharma. In this way, Krishna and Balaram completely gave themselves to Vasudeva and Devaki. But while they were doing this, Nanda Maharaj was not there. Because after Krishna was victorious and was dancing with the cowherd boys, and after he liberated Kamsa, when he first approached Vasudeva and Devaki, Nanda Maharaj and the older cowherd men all went back to their little settlement where their ox carts and everything had a little circle in the outskirts of the city. So he didn't see this reciprocation with Vasudeva and Devaki. Because Nanda Maharaj was thinking, everybody knew that Balaram was Vasudeva's son. But Nanda Maharaj, everybody in Vrindavan knew that Krishna is Yashoda and Nanda's son. Then Krishna called for all the Brishnis and the Yadus and the Andakas and all of the people who were running away and hiding from Kamsa. He called them all back to Mathura. Now Kamsa's gone, we could live like a family together once again. And I'm here with you. And they all came back and it was wonderful, wonderful celebration. Krishna and Balaram approached Nanda Maharaj and said, it is our duty to remain in Mathura for a few more days. You should go back to Brajbhumi. Nanda Maharaj was like a statue to go back without Krishna. No one will have any faith in me as their leader anymore. What will Yashoda Mai think? I promised her I would come back with you. How can I go? But ultimately, whatever Krishna's will is their will. But Krishna said, I will return. He promised, I will return. And on the basis of that promise, Nanda Maharaj was willing to go back to Vrindavan, carrying Krishna in the core of his heart. But Krishna was already in the core of the hearts of every Brijabasi. But he was willing to go back without Krishna in form. Krishna promised, I will return. And our great acharyas explain, why would Krishna do that? And they give so many analogies. One is that the Nanda, Yashoda, the Gopas, the Gopis, their prema, their ecstatic love is like the purest gold. And when you put gold in fire, it doesn't ruin the gold. It only makes the gold shine brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter. And by putting them in the fire of separation, it only increased their love. More and more and more. This Vipralamba Bhav, this love was shining brighter and brighter. It was becoming ever expanding in their separation from Krishna. The loving reciprocation Krishna was having in the hearts of the Gopas and the Gopis of Vrindavan in that separation was far greater than even if he was personally, physically present. But what kept them alive was only these three words. I will return. And they had total faith in Krishna's love for them. Whatever they may have said, whatever they may have done in their loving relationships with Krishna in separation, they knew Krishna will return. Thank you very much.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Gaura Premananda.
Hare Krishna, there is an important announcement. All the Prabhujis are requested to go down for breakfast prasadam through the stair on the side of Gaur Nitaya Hall.